I'm John Krall. This is an election year, the time when citizens determine what sort of government they will have for the next few years. Today on No Limits, we will have the first of our conversations with the candidates to become the next governor of Indiana. We will talk today with Democrat John Gregg. We will talk about taxes, we will talk about jobs, we will talk about education, we will talk about the future of the state. We will talk with No Limits about what matters to the people of Indiana with a man who aspires to lead them. Please join this important conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits with the man who wishes the Democratic candidate for governor, the man who wants to be our next governor, John Gregg. Representative Gregg, welcome to the program.
Look, you can't call me that anymore. I'm not a judge. Those titles stay
We still do that because it's a courtesy title for the office. I could call you Speaker Gregg, too,
well,
I suppose.
Anyway, but thank you, John. I'm glad to be here. Really am. I enjoy it. I enjoy public radio. I enjoy public television and watch it at home all the time.
Well, thank you for the plug. We appreciate that. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'm going to start first with kind of a general question. Why would you want to be governor? As I've alluded to before, you were in public service for a number of years. Mm-hmm. You were in the Indiana House of Representatives, were the Speaker of the House, and left about a decade ago, left public service. Why now do you decide you want to return to public life?
Sure. I was Speaker of the House, and I did leave office 10 years ago voluntarily. Mm-hmm. I always like to mention that. In the last 10 years, I have served a couple years as the interim president of Vincennes University, so did public service, just in maybe a different way. You know, last year after the election, even the last election, I should say, in 2010, I think voters sent pretty much a message to the legislature that they wanted the legislature to concentrate on the economy, to work together. And instead, what we seem to have gotten was, you know, a lot of let's get even with the other side on both sides. Let's push some extreme agendas. Let's deal with social issues. And the last 10 years, I may not have been in office, but I was back practicing law in Vincennes most of the time. And Indiana had a lot of opportunities. And I thought back to when I was Speaker and the numbers were close in the House and the Republicans controlled the Senate, or the times when we were tied. And I always had an ability to bring people together. And if we were going to take advantage of these opportunities in ag and in advanced manufacturing, life sciences, logistics, energy, if we were going to improve our education system, we needed to have somebody who could go and bring both sides together. And I feel I can do that. In fact, I'm the only candidate who can actually say I've delivered results in a bipartisan atmosphere, because two of the years I was Speaker, we were tied 50-50, and there's no better example than that. So I've got a clear record of that, and I'm proud of that.
How would you go about that? I mean, given the fact that if you are elected governor, short of a political earthquake, most likely Republicans are going to control both the House and the Senate. So you'd be dealing with a legislative branch that's controlled by the opposite party. How do you get things done in that atmosphere?
Well, that's a great question. Again, first of all, I have done that. I've done that before. We were tied 50-50 in the House for 2 years. The other 4 years I was Speaker, it was 52-48. And the whole time I was Speaker, we had a Republican Senate. But how we did that, it seemed pretty simple, and I think it really is. We did three things. We talked, we listened, we showed respect. those three things made all the difference. A leader will bring people of different backgrounds together, will listen to the ideas, find a solution, and use those people to implement that. I've done that when it comes to balancing a budget, eliminating inventory tax, improving the funding for education, and doing it in a bipartisan manner. You have to worry more about that next generation than you do the next election. And I've always been one, and I think this is important, I tell people, if you look beyond the party labels and look at what I've accomplished and look at what we can do, I think I'm pleased with that. And I tell people, if you're an ideologue and you see everything left and right, I'm not your candidate. But if you see ideas not as left or right or Democrat or Republican, but if you see ideas only as good or bad, right or wrong, then I'm your candidate. And we can do this. We need to be more inclusive in Indiana on everything we're dealing with, and we can do that.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit. Why do, to some degree, you have to run and encourage people to look beyond the party labels? Why is it, basically, you have to run as a minority party candidate here, that Democrats can't even deny a quorum in the Indiana Senate right now, and they lose a few more seats in the House, they're going to be in the same situation. What's happened to the Democratic Party brand that's put them in that weakened position?
Well, you know, you have landslides. Both parties have landslides that occur. This landslide that occurred in 2010 occurred at a bad time for the Democrat Party. But, you know, Hoosiers have shown a willingness to vote beyond party labels. It is a Republican-leaning state. But you know, they have a tendency to vote for Democrats that are pro-business, Democrats that are moderate, conservative. I mean, I'm a moderate Democrat. I'm fiscally conservative. I've got a record for that. Hoosiers all are a little right of center, but they're not extremist, and that's another big difference. So you do have to challenge people to look beyond the party labels. And if they do that, and Hoosiers are willing to do it when you talk about it and you remind them, then they're going to compare and contrast records, and I feel real comfortable with that.
How would you, you've talked about getting past the extremism, probably the most violent controversy we've had in Indiana state government in the past few years has been the battle over right to work. If you had been governor at that time, how would you have handled that dispute?
Sure. You know, and that's a great question. And I think that the thing you would have to do, you would have to have dialogue with legislative leaders on a daily basis. And I can tell you that when I was speaker, I spent more time dealing with the Republican leaders. Part of the time it was former Speaker Paul Manweiler. Part of the time it was now current Speaker Brian Bosma. I spent more time talking with those individuals and their leadership team. I spent more time talking to them and the Republican leaders of the Senate than I truly did members of my own party. And you have to do that. It requires constant communication and keeping focused on about 85% of the topics all of us agree on. That's the one great thing about being a Democrat. We're truly a pretty broad spectrum. And if you could lead Democrats in the House of Representatives, because we go from the far left to the far right, you've got the ability to bring both sides together, find those areas we agree on. I'm not talking about compromising on your absolute truths. I'm finding about cooperating, collaborating, finding some common ground, and moving ahead on those issues that make a difference.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten some email questions from listeners. This one's from a listener named Mary, who says, two questions. One, what public assets would you consider selling? Two, if you can't think of any right now, would you take a pledge to place a referendum on a ballot before doing so? And she closes by saying, burns me up when politicians sell our roads and utilities and we have no say in it.
Well, Mary, I can tell you, I get asked that question, at least, what would I have done about the toll road? And I tell people, it doesn't matter what I would have done because the toll road is gone. I can tell you, like most Democrats, I don't look real favorably on privatization. But I will have
to. Why not?
But I will have to tell you, I would not say that I would never consider something like that, because that's pretty broad sweeping statement. The best example is looking at the toll road. I mean, that decision to sell it and all's gone, but we've got 67 years on the lease left. The money is gone. The money's gone. I-69 comes somewhere between Crane and Bloomington. Crane is the second and sometimes the third largest employer south of Indianapolis. It's got to be finished, because that naval base and those up to 6,000 jobs inside and outside the gate are at risk. You've got the road from Indianapolis up to South Bend 31 that those people have been waiting for years for that to be four lane. We've got some bypasses, but it's not connected. You've got the Hoosier Heartland, which comes in at Fort Wayne, goes out through Lafayette and over at Covington. We've got an opportunity for logistics in Indiana, which does mean rail and means our ports, but it also means roads and bridges, and that's what comes in most people's mind. 60% of our bridges have to be totally refurbished or replaced in the next 20 years, and we've got some of these ideas. So I want to remind people that when you sell an asset like that and the money's gone, the asset's gone, the money's gone, and now we've got something sitting up there we can't get. I would have to say this. The governor did a great job on the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. You go into BMV today, John, and it's like going into Fridays. You know, the people are dressed alike, and they, hey, how can we help you? You know, it's like wanting to tell you their lunch specials. Governor Daniels used that business acumen of his and revamped that. I think the question is, if we could turn that agency that way and he was able to do that, then why could we not have ran the toll road at a profit? I mean, the mantra of the other party is government should be run like a business. So why didn't we do that and have an asset up there that was kicking money into the state coffers?
Well, as we're talking about this, then, if we're going to invest in all of this infrastructure, how do we pay for it?
Absolutely. The biggest challenge is money comes from gasoline tax. The state of Indiana collects a gasoline tax, and the federal government does. Truth of the matter is those are dwindling sources of revenue because we drive more fuel-efficient cars. My older son, who's a junior at Butler, drives a car that gets over 45 miles a gallon. We've got less money coming in, and that is a fact. Also, one thing we could do in Indiana, we only get back about 92 cents on the dollar for every dollar we send. So I would work with our congressional delegation. I'd work with the U.S. Government. I'd work with our president and our liaisons there to try to see to it if we could get closer to each dollar that we pay into it, if we could get a better return on the money. And then we've got to have serious discussions in Indiana about how we do pay for that. I'm saying we have to discuss. There doesn't seem to be any excitement out there over increasing the gas tax. Some people, there doesn't seem to be a lot of excitement either for tolls, which is a way. Some states are looking at tolling lanes. Some are looking at ways how you pay per mile you drive. I'm not suggesting any of these. What I am saying, we got to talk about them because we're having a shorter source of revenue. So we've got to have some serious discussions. And that's why we got to lay aside these Democrat and Republican labels.
Well, in part, it sounds like what you're saying is, though, that revenue enhancements have to be on the table somewhere right now. I mean,
they don't have to be if Hoosiers decide they don't want if they don't want our bridges and roads and infrastructure to keep up or expand or anything like that. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but I think one of the key areas we can deal with is logistics, and those can be excellent paying jobs. I mean, shipping stuff here in Indiana, through Indiana. There is another way to pay for it, and it's what's called the P3 projects, the public-private. So there's some options out there, and I think that an honest discussion, and the way we start that is to remind Hoosiers that an investment in infrastructure is an investment in our state, and they can see we're having better roads and bridges and ports are going to mean that there's more people at work. That means there's going to be more warehouses for people. There's going to be more truck driving jobs. It means the stuff manufactured in Indiana is going to have an opportunity to export out of the state a lot quicker and more efficiently. Lots of opportunities that affect each and every one of us.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter. Again, we're talking with John Gregg. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Gotten an email question from a listener named Ann in Monrovia who says, please justify the arithmetic you use to propose eliminating corporate taxes. As a citizen, I believe that corporations have civic duties and responsibilities and should pay taxes. And also says, thank you for your commercials. They address serious issues with a light touch and serve as a nice counterbalance to Mike Pence's heavy-handed emphasis on family and patriotism, which he uses to shield his extremely conservative social agenda. Good luck.
God bless you. I wish we could play that over and over. Hey, let me say something real quick to the first caller,
yeah.
Mary.
Right.
Mary, you know, the FSSA privatization failed. I would be, as I said, I would never say I wouldn't do it, but looking at the record, it is so unlikely that I would want to privatize. I mean, it's just too broad of a statement to say you never would do that, because there are some things I feel only government should do.
What things should only
well, like FSSA, the Department of Children's Services, the welfare, what you and I call the traditional welfare roles, I mean, that are affecting people's lives directly. You need those answered. I mean, we've seen what happened when we tried to privatize FSSA. I mean, it flopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are places where you need that. And that's probably the best example. But on this other question, first of all, it is targeted. Our tax is targeted after two things. Any Indiana business, corporate, partnership, LLP, LLC, sole proprietorship, if it is headquartered in Indiana, and this is targeted at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, they do pay an Indiana corporate tax. We would give those companies a credit based on some restrictions, based on dollar amounts, but for the taxes they pay. That is not one of the state's larger revenue generators. There's quite a few states. There's a majority of the states don't even have a corporate tax like that anymore. It's an incentive designed solely to Indiana companies headquartered here, number one, to the good companies that are here that aren't headquartered here, Chrysler, Allison's, companies like that. If you are involved in manufacturing, research and development, like Boston Scientific down at Spencer, if you're in those high-paying jobs and you're going to add more employees, and if you're going to expand your factory employees, grow the factory and add more equipment, we will give you a tax credit too. And we do that by not touching this supposed surplus we've got out there. We do it by doing efficiency audits. Everybody knows Indiana found $500 million by moving a couple of pillows down there at the State House, you know, just laying around somewhere. Oddly enough, there are six other states that in the last half a dozen years have started doing these efficiency audits, because apparently it's money does sometimes get misplaced. I can't imagine it, but it's like, you know, you put on your suit pants, one day you got a couple of bucks in it.
Mm-hmm. But not $500 million.
Well, yeah, not $500 million, but you got a couple of dollars in it.
Yeah.
Well, the states that have done this have all found between 5 and 7% monies each year that have just been put somewhere and they're not being used, or it's just out there and people, I mean, I can't imagine it, but I've seen the facts on it. 5%, taking the low figure of ours, is $700 million a year. So we're being very Hoosier, I want to tell my good friend in Monrovia. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're not touching that surplus because we really don't know if there is one or how much mm-hmm. it is. We're paying for that the Indiana way. We're paying as we go, not the Washington, D.C. way where you cut now, pay later. I mean, we're doing the way Hoosiers do. We're paying for it as we go. That surplus, we need to see exactly what's there before we start messing with that.
When we touch on that, the $500 million that popped up in a couple of different instances here, you know, one of the things that was kind of confusing about that is it was hard to establish whose responsibility it is to track things like that, to figure out where the accounting should be. If you were governor, what kind of change would you push for to make sure that, you know, $500 million doesn't go missing?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, I know our governor's a very bright man, and mm-hmm. his agency heads let him down. Mm-hmm. I mean, they truly did let him down. I don't know if you call it party fatigue or agency fatigue or what, but what we would do, I think a lot of it can be tracked in these other states. They do it by having a quick independent audit, and then they electronically follow it. That is how these other states have done it. That's what we would do. We again would look to how these other states have done it, run it by experts in Indiana, and would implement it. But you need to do it, because when people find out that you find mm-hmm. $200 million, then $300 million, they think, what in the world's going on there? I mean, we got a responsibility to these people. This is their money.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a listener who called in but didn't want to go on the air, who's asking a question. Given that you've presented yourself as a moderate Democrat who can work across lines, why did you pick a liberal running mate, one of the more liberal members of the Indiana General Assembly?
You know what?
That's Vi Simpson,
that's,
I should
that's,
say.
That's a great question. I appreciate the listener for calling it. I am moderate, and people in my party would say I'm conservative. And this caller would probably say that, you know, well, I don't know if that's that, but I am. I'm a fiscal conservative, and I'm also conservative in a lot of other ways. But our party is a broad-based party. It truly is. I did not want someone with the same ideology that I have. Mm-hmm. I wanted someone that would challenge my thinking. And when I said half full, they'd say half empty. I wanted someone that brought a different perspective to it. It's a huge contrast between me and my opponent, who basically picked a carbon copy of him. I think the more we broaden, the more we're inclusive, the better it becomes. And also, mm-hmm. Senator Simpson has been a county official and a state senator, and she can lead if it would happen to be. She has the experience to govern, and that was the most important thing.
Doug, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys.
Hi Doug.
Hey, John, question. I'm down here in Lyons.
Lyons, Indiana. You're just you're at home.
Oh, yeah, and you're just down the road from me.
Yeah. Absolutely, 8 miles.
Your question,
yeah,
please,
much.
Doug. Your question,
hey,
please.
Listen, I have a little sister that lives up around by Warsaw in Kosciuszko County.
Yes.
All right, well, she's not seeing very much of your advertising up there.
Well, let me tell
your question,
you.
Doug?
Yeah, Doug, we've been on South Bend, Fort Wayne, and Lafayette, commercial television, starting the fourth week. We've been on cable out of Chicago for 4 weeks, and I can tell you that I've been in Plymouth, LaPorte, Portage, and Valparaiso within the last week, and I had people stopping me at events, telling me, you know, talking about our advertisement. So I don't know if she just doesn't watch much television or what. Our yard signs are just going out now, because a lot of areas of the state have prohibition on yard signs until 30 days out. So that's why you've not seen yard signs. But our television ads are up and running. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for the call, Doug. We've gotten an email question from a listener who says, Mr. Gregg, do you feel the Indiana death penalty should be abolished? Thank you. It's from James, who's here in Indianapolis.
James, I do not. I do support the death penalty.
And then we've got another question from a listener named Jerry here in Indianapolis, who says, Planned Parenthood of Indiana provides family planning services, education, contraception services, and a variety of other women's health services to Hoosier women. Abortion services account for about 3% of Planned Parenthood spending, none of which by law comes from government sources. Arguably, the overwhelming amount of work performed by Planned Parenthood is directed toward prevention of unwanted pregnancies and therefore prevention of abortion. What is your stand on the use of taxpayer funding to subsidize the 97% of Planned Parenthood activities that are not abortion? Please do not waffle.
Well, I want to thank Jerry Wallace. Mm. Jerry, if you'd have seen my ad, you would have known where I am. If you've seen any interviews, you would have known where I am. Let me tell you that I 100% support Planned Parenthood's use of tax dollars, and their use of tax dollars, as you've pointed out, and I appreciate the opportunity to say this to the listening audience, taxpayer dollars can only go for family planning, birth control, cervical, precancer, cervical screenings, and pap test. That is all that money can be used for. I support that. That is not a pro-life or pro-choice issue. You can be pro-life and support Planned Parenthood's charge in those areas, in what they do. And I do. And it is wrong to call that a pro-life or pro-choice issue. It is about women's access to health care. I feel very strongly about that. That is a huge difference between me and my opponent, who spent 12 years doing nothing but wanting to shut down Planned Parenthood, which has nothing to do but women's access to health care. And I can tell you, as someone who had prostate cancer under the age of 50, early detection and early treatment is the key to overcoming cancer. And had I not have had that, I wouldn't have been here today. So I feel strongly with that. And that's a huge distinction. So, Jerry, please tell that to your friends, because that's why I remind people every day, the guy I'm running against wants to deal with nothing. His record dealt with nothing but social issues. I'm the only candidate that's balanced the budget, improved funding for education, eliminated taxes in the inventory tax, mm-hmm. and brought people together in a bipartisan fashion. Great question.
Well, and that gets the point. You've said again and again that you're not running on social issues, that you're
right.
running on economics and job issues, which sort of echoes what Governor Daniels said at one point when he said he wanted to see a truce on social issues. How likely is it, though, that we're going to be able to get that with the Indiana General Assembly?
You know, Governor Daniels, I think, did a pretty good job of enforcing that until the last 2 years, and in mm-hmm. part, and I don't want to go down
this
road.
Was that lame duck status?
Well, I don't think it was lame duck as much as he maybe had his eye. I don't mm-hmm. know. I mean, I've known the governor for 30 years, but I don't know him well enough to know what his mm-hmm. thinkings were. And if he was looking at possibly a national office, that might have changed somewhat of an outlook. I think you talk with legislative leaders. This election's about jobs, and that's why when I bring up social issues, I want people to realize my opponent's never created a job, not one job, not one time. He has not done anything. He's voted against the automotive industry, and a vote against auto workers, a vote against Chrysler and General Motors. He's voted against our steel industry. He's never been about jobs, only about social issues. You've got to look not just beyond the party label. You got to look at the records.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Rick, welcome to the program. Rick, are you with us? Well, Rick had a question that, as far as I can tell, was a variation. Just asked how you would have handled the right-to-work dispute differently.
Sure.
Assuming the thing exploded in the fashion that it did, and you had legislators screaming at each other and demonstrators filling the halls of the state house and people getting ready literally to flee the state or not showing up, how would you have handled that differently?
Yeah, you know, John, you've been around the legislative mm-hmm. Arena. Some would say it's the best live entertainment show for free that you can see in the city. But with John, that's actually funny. You used to have a sense of humor.
I did. Well, no.
I don't know. Did the college take it out of you?
I don't
looking
think
here
so. No,
student.
I did.
I'll tell you what, and it does go back. You have to be in constant communication. and a governor that is involved with the legislature, as all of our governors mm-hmm. have been, but I think the governor stepped back a little bit from this issue. I think you'd have to be involved. Anytime we're dealing with divisive issues, we're not moving the state forward. We're not taking advantage of the opportunities in agriculture where our aquaculture, sustainability, urban farming could change the way in Indiana we mm-hmm. feed the world. We're not taking advantage of our ports and in the Gary Airport and the Burns Harbor and the port down at New Albany and Mount Vernon. We're not taking advantage of our methane, our natural gas, our wind, our biofuels, our coal. We're not taking advantage of our life science industries. We're not taking advantage of advanced manufacturing opportunities when all we're trying to do is fuss and fight. And I call that get even. Mm-hmm. And there's too much of that. And that's why I tell people, if you're an ideologue, and that's kind of an ideologue-based argument, I mean, and it is, I can tell you one thing. That mm-hmm. when I'm governor of the state of Indiana, and the state of Indiana, like all states, spends money to try to attract jobs, there will not be one tax dollar, not one penny, that will go to those poverty wage jobs. Those people that are paying $8, $10, $12 an hour that want to come to Indiana, I want them to come. And I will work with them by helping them with the government bureaucracy, providing them technical assistance, work with the local governments that want them to come. But our dollars are going to go to those jobs that are paying great wages, those high-skilled, high-wage-paying jobs that have benefits that can allow a family to help a child go to college or go through an apprentice program or go to and get a two-year associate's degree that allow them to buy a decent vehicle. That's what I'm going to target.
Well, and you've talked about how the path to doing this is getting people to work together, and presumably, you know, again, if you're working with a Republican legislature,
I will be working with a Republican legislature.
Your message there, presumably with the Republicans, is we want to work with you. What do you say to your fellow Democrats who, frankly, over the past couple of years, feel like they've been kicked around quite a bit? They lost right to work. They lost vouchers. They lost on a lot of big issues. You say you want to get past the get even stuff. What do you tell them?
Well, the get-even stuff, I mean, what you do, again, is you get leaders and you start talking about what we need to do in Indiana in our tax code, our regulatory climate, what we need to do to make this a better state to allow our current businesses to grow, how we can truly have state contracts going to Indiana companies, how we can improve our export. Governor Daniels, to his credit, has improved our exports 50% in ag. I set a goal, Senator Simpson and I did, to improve our exports another 50% and the company's exporting 30%. You concentrate on those things because every time we add a job, it makes life better for everybody in Indiana. Every job, because we're all tied together in this.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a tweet from a listener who asks what your position is on constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage.
Yeah, I don't. I have been a supporter of traditional marriage. My record's clear on that. As governor, I don't even sign that. That is something that goes before the voter. So, and that is another one of those issues that we spend all this time fighting on. That you know, they're divisive issues, and I understand that.
Gotten an email question from a listener named John. That makes, I guess, three of us now
Good.
On this program. What are your thoughts on the current path that education reform is taking here in Indiana?
You know, I've traveled for now 21 months around the state meeting with teachers all over. I've never met one teacher who hasn't said education could be better. Mm-hmm. I've never met one teacher that hasn't said, hold me accountable. What they do say is they'd like a voice. They'd like to be included. I differ very strongly with the way that reform has been done because it was done from the top down. I don't know how you implement changes in the classroom by degrading and demoralizing our school teachers. I tell people the day I'm elected is the day that they're going to see the beginning of the end of the war on public education and public educators. we can't reform schools if the people that are going to be implementing the reforms aren't at least at the table. They deserve a seat at the table. But so does that principal of that junior high school when the girls are taller than the boys and the boys' voices are higher. And, you know, we need a school superintendent there who has kept a school corporation together with, you know, pliers and duct tape and baling wire. And we need a school board member there. And here's a novel idea. What about a parent? We need to be more inclusive. The best ideas do not come out of that state capitol building.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. We're talking with John Gregg. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air but wanted to know what your position is on immigration.
Thank you again. Sure. Good questions. I got to tell you, it is so nice to be on public radio. I'll give you another plug.
You actually, yeah,
well,
can talk
I do
in paragraphs.
Because you know, you can talk, and it's not like interrupting for a jingle or you know, or somebody hawking, you know, stuff that's going to grow hair on me and you. The point of immigration, it is a federal problem. Mm-hmm. And the federal government has once again, and my chief opponent is a member of the federal government, they've done nothing on it. You cannot have that solved state by state by state. That's not a solution. We also, I can tell you that a couple of years ago, there was a bill turned in. I'll call it the Delf bill. It was done by Senator Delf that would basically target people, not to be candid on their looks. And, you know, this is America. We don't do that. So if something like that comes back, it's not going to find me very supportive. In fact, I won't be supportive of it. And, you know, the DREAM Act for these young men and women that America's their home and their parents entered in here illegally. Mm-hmm. And these young people have known no other place but the United States of America to tell them that they have to leave. That's wrong. This is their home. And I don't like that because we're targeting people that may not always look like or come from backgrounds like you and me. Now, I'm talking about the ones that are here. But if Congress would get off their ears and quit going on recess and quit leaving this issue unturned and quit leaving things like the farmers' distress bill, the drought relief bill out there, and if we could get, as I'm candid, my opponent to do the job he's got rather than the job he wants, we could get some of this stuff moving. But they don't seem to want to work.
Well, and we're talking about issues here on No Limits. You talked about doing away with some taxes, and one of those is the sales tax on gasoline. We'd made reference to that. Where would you make up the revenue by
Excellent.
Doing away with that?
And again, we pay for that. And again, I want to mention, that's the sales tax on gasoline. That is not
the gas tax.
It's not the gas tax. Gas tax goes to town, state. That's how we pay for our roads. Yeah. We would do that. We would do that by collecting. We've got two ways we pay for our two tax cuts that we've proposed. One of them I spoke of, and it's a combination of these. One of them, of course, is through the efficiency audits, which I explained. Yeah. The other one is by enforcing the current law. The current law in Indiana says places like Amazon that's sitting out here, I'm pointing, which nobody can see, west of Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's not a visual medium.
Yeah, sitting out here west of Indianapolis is not paying sales tax. They are to be paying sales tax. The law's clear on that. Yeah. The businesses that I stop at and I buy stuff from that are here in Indiana pay sales tax. It's wrong for them not to pay sales tax. And it's what the law says. So by just enforcing the current law, we do that. And the reason why we do that is we don't want to touch that surplus, because that surplus didn't come from a growing economy. Half of it came from cuts in public education.
Would you restore those cuts?
Well, that's something we've got to see how much money we've got. But I'll tell you, $600 million came from schools K through 12. $300 came from our universities. $200 came from money refunded from the broken Department of Children's Services. The problem is, I don't know how much money we've got, and we won't know until we have an independent audit. And with that said, remember, we owe the federal government $1.7 billion in unemployment insurance back that we owe to them, and our unfunded liabilities in pensions in Indiana is about $1.8 billion. So to say we've got a surplus when you owe $3 billion is a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it's a little, well.
Yeah.
And I guess where I would follow up then is what I'm trying to get at. Assuming there's a surplus of any kind or that there are funds sitting there, what would be your first priority for those funds? You know, would you keep them in the surplus? Would you restore some of the cuts to public education? Would you pay off some of the debt that you've alluded to? Where would you spend your funds?
Well, there's one thing people got to remember. There is a piece of legislation that, and we have to follow the law. Nobody's above the law that says if it reaches a certain threshold, there has to be a refund.
Mm-hmm.
So that would happen whether people want it, don't want it. Again, that's the law. So that would be the first thing. I think at that time, and I can tell you from traveling around talking with Hoosiers, that there's two places they'd like to see that money go. Some of them want to see it go into restoring the cuts in education. Some of them want to see it go in infrastructure. And then there's a group out there that kind of wants it to go in both. So that seems to be where Hoosiers want it. I think that's where legislators would want it to go. And I think that's one of those things where we have to have the discussion. But to sit here and say we're going to send X amount of million dollars back here and we don't even know if there is one is a little premature and irresponsible. I'd love nothing more for that to be there and be a real surplus so we could have that discussion on those things.
We are talking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Yeah, John, I don't know if you read the story in this weekend Star about the Carmel Redevelopment Commission and the mayor running up unsustainable debt. And part of this has been done because TIF money is being used for through a loophole to be used for things that it wasn't originally intended for. And I was just curious what you would do as government to help close those loopholes and provide more transparency and accountability so taxpayers know how that money is being spent.
Well, I did not read the story, so I will have to tell you in that sense. But you used a word that that I want to use more and that I want to see more of, and that's transparency. And John being in the background, John Crawl being in the background, he is. The more and more we let Hoosiers know when we make these deals on leases, when we make these deals on attracting industry to Indiana, when we find ways that tax dollars are being either misused and not illegally, but just not used for the intended purposes, we need to have an honest discussion, let people know, hey, here's something we need to close and we need to tighten it. And I think transparency, I want everything to be as transparent as it can be. And I'll use again negotiating with businesses coming. You can't do it while you're negotiating, but when the deal is done, I think Hoosiers, who would be my boss, who's paying the bills, they've got a right to know what we promised and what the terms are. To keep it hidden from your boss is wrong. I mean, you know, we need to let people know it. And because I want people to know they've got a voice in government.
Thank you very much for the call, Kyle.
Thank you.
Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Sure. My question is really about transit. I know this is a popular issue in Indianapolis, but around the state. I wonder where Mr. Gregg stands on the issue of voters really having the right to choose whether or not they want to dedicate local revenue for public transit, and not just in Indianapolis, but in all parts of the state, whether they should have that right to be able to have that say.
Thanks very much for the call, Ryan.
Yep.
Ryan, I don't know if you're asking if I support referendum and initiative, which is kind of what it sounds like,
yeah,
to be candid. I'll have to be honest there. There's the states that have that. It seems to have run amok, like, you know, a California can have 230 questions on a ballot. I think there's a reason why Indiana never had initiative and referendum. But I will tell you this. I think the legislature was wrong this past session when two counties, Marion and Hamilton, came and they, not the other 90 counties, they wanted to have a discussion. And if their elected officials, as a matter of local government, wanted to discuss mass transit, it was wrong for the legislature to say no. With that said, let me tell you some opportunities we have. This baffles me. I get excited over this, John.
Okay.
I come from a mining background. The largest deep water port in the United States, inland deep water ports, Burns Harbor, Indiana. And we lack a little over 30 miles of rail. And again, I'm using a visual, as John can tell. 30 miles of rail, or we'd have rail running up the entire western part of the state. Now, what that means is, that means items getting off up there at Burns Harbor, if we had rail, could be shipped down to Mount Vernon, put on the port there. They could be flown out of Gary. They could be put on the interstate system. But it also means coal from the south can come north. Produce from the south can come north. Goods located off the St. Lawrence Seaway can go into the heartland of America, creating jobs in Indiana. With that said, we have in Indiana, we make rail up at Fort Wayne at Steel Dynamics. We make rail cars in Muncie, and we make those ginormous diesel engines at Columbus and are soon probably going to be making them in Seymour, yet we don't even have a rail policy. You know, I mean, this we got to get back to having discussions. And, you know, we at least need to have the discussions. We got to get back to where we can disagree and not being disagreeable. If it's something, a direction Hoosiers don't want to go to, fine. But we've got to at least look at these things, because it does amaze me. We do all this stuff in rail in Indiana and then don't do it. But his question on the local option was just two counties.
Well, and aside from having a discussion about whether, you know, whether people from different parties can work together, it sounds like what you're saying is we need to have a discussion about what the role of government should be, whether it has a role in making plans, whether it has a role in investing in, you know, the future of people. Have we ducked that conversation in this state?
You know what? I can tell you that the role that I, as governor, we've got such opportunities, and we just released, Senator Simpson and I did, we've released a lot of things, and just yesterday, a small business and a manufacturing. One thing we want to do, and Indiana's done a good job of this, we just want to improve on it. We want to facilitate private industry, the private labs, the university labs, of getting that information interchanged quicker, getting that information that is done in a lab to the factory floor. Some people may not know this, but we've got world-class leading research for batteries going on at Westgate, at Crane, south of a little town of Scotland, Indiana. As that technology is developing, we need to be getting that to potential businesses in Indiana that could make batteries. We need to get some of that great research and development taking place at Notre Dame, IU, Purdue, Rose Holman. We need to get that into the factories and into the hands of people. Government can help facilitate that.
We've gotten a question from a listener, an email question that says, what would you do basically to make sure that Indiana is more green, to invest in green technology?
Sure. You know, I'm a fan of, I'll use our windmills, for example. There's a paper in Fort Wayne, it's the smaller of the two, that always gets on me. It says the only thing that I talk about Indiana's windmills. They've never listened or interviewed me, for that matter of fact, so I'll get my barb in there at the media.
The News Sentinel.
which I think they ought to just call the Republican News Sentinel, or conservative Republican News Sentinel would be better. You know, we have got such opportunities in Indiana in energy, and part of it is renewables like methane. We've not even scratched the surface on that. We've also got opportunities with solar and wind, and to build those capabilities, we can put Hoosiers to work. But we need to do everything we can to encourage the LED buildings, the certification. We need to do like what Ball State, their whole idea that the president up there, Dr. Joanne Gore, is doing with the geothermal. I mean, this is cutting edge and it's green, and we need to do everything we can. Being green is not only smart for the future, it creates jobs.
Travis, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly.
Hi, Travis.
Hi. I just wanted to say it's refreshing to hear someone that supports workers and doesn't give such priority to corporations, but yet can still take a stand for what marriage is, not what they would like marriage to be someday. It's good to see that you don't shy away from it, even though you're not going to make that your focal point.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, and what I'd like to talk about here, since we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I'm going to try to synthesize a couple of questions that we've gotten here. One of them would be, if you are elected governor.
Now, you should say when you are elected.
You get to say that. Okay. I don't get to say that. I have to say if. I have to say it. And I will say it with your opponent, too, who's going to be on the program on October 11th. But what I'd like to say is, what would your first priority be? You know, starting in January 2013, you're elected. What do you do first?
I have said all along, this whole election is about jobs. But I said in March of last year in an open letter to the Indianapolis Star and to some other newspapers, the first thing I will do, it is all about jobs, and jobs are going to be the priority. But the first thing I'm going to do is on Wednesday after the election, as governor-elect, I'm going to announce a committee of people that include policemen, investigators, police chiefs, sheriffs, prosecutors, former employees of the Department of Children's Services, members of current employees of Children's Services. The DCS in Indiana is broken. Mm-hmm. It is broken, and it has got to be fixed. We have children that are falling through the cracks, children that are being hurt, being abused, and too many times worse. And then we have somebody, and the Star recently said we were trying to make politics out of it. I'm not trying to make politics out of it. I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. I'm saying that we got to do better. And to brag when you say we've returned $200 million back to the state's coffers when you got problems in it, my mom would say that's a sin. Mm. And I mean, and then now when you call, if you're going to report child abuse, you call a toll-free hotline and some people sitting Lord knows where. Mm. They'll listen to the call and they'll make the decision. When John Gregg's governor, when there's a call like that, we either need to have an investigator or a police officer or somebody go out there then and check and see it.
I'm going to squeeze one last question in, I think, from a listener named Ian who asked, you know, what is the one big reason that someone should vote for John Gregg for governor? You got about 20 seconds.
You know what? The big reason is I'm running for governor not because I want to be called governor, but because I can do the job. I want to serve the citizens of Indiana. I'm the only one that's delivered results. Look beyond that party label. See that I've balanced the budget. See that I've abolished taxes and increased funding for education. That's the reason you want to elect me.
John Gregg, thank you very much for spending this time with us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
John, it's always good to see you again.
And I should emphasize that we will have your opponent.
Rupert?
No, we're going to have Republican Mike Pence on the program on October 11th. And we have invited Rupert, but Rupert has so far not responded. We will be back next week when we'll be talking about electronic medical records. Until then, make this a great week. Thank you for spending this time with us. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM, and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.